and this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Squamish, hope you're listening. East 66th Street. Susan, hello to Wendy. San Jose, Costa Rica. Hola. West 54th Street, Lander, Wyoming, Long Beach, California, wherever you are, and especially those of you right here in the radio listening audience, because you're the lucky ones who, like me, get to benefit from these fabulous artists, musicians, folks of writers today, big time, who are here with us. It is time for Arts Alive and Local. Got a very full show today. It's going to be a blast. And really, seriously, lots of writers and a little bit of music. But one of the writers happens to be a musician. We're going to start right off with Ivy Ross Ritchie's piece. And then I'm going to bring you wonderful artists.
One of these days, I just won't have any days left. That's why I like to listen, like there's something to learn. And one of these sweet days, I'll no longer be this body's guest. And it's hard to know if I will return. Oh, what is it? What is it? That I'll miss this breath that begins and ends it all. Will I be able to recall? It's hard to know.
Wow, I just slapped that right off. I meant to blend it out. Hey, I'm going to get back to that fabulous music. That's Ivy Ross Ritchie, who is also a writer. But first, I want to start with Sophia Shalmiev, who is here because she has a new book out as well. And also, she needs to go first because in addition to two adorable children who aren't so tiny anymore, it's amazing, really. She is part of the wonderful celebration that is going on in Cannon Beach starting this evening at 5 p.m. That is the 8th annual Get Lit at the Beach. And I had a couple of guests on the 22nd of March to talk about that, but they're in Cannon Beach setting things up, and Sophie's here, and I want to first congratulate you on your new book, which is very powerful. Come in a little bit closer, and name of the book is Mother Winter, and I want you to tell folks, first a little background, though. You used to live... You lived here in Cannon Beach for a while?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. I love Carroll so much. There's so much history. Yeah, we moved here in 2009. And when Jake, my son, who's now 10 years old, was just a year and a half just about then. And we lived here for 3 and some odd years. And then we moved to Portland. I started my MFA program at Portland State University. Because I decided that full-time writing is something that I want to do. Before that happened, what kind of spurned it on more is that Mike Burgess died. He was kind of like my writing community, my writing teacher out here. Yeah. And I was already thinking kind of, what am I going to do? How am I going to make this book happen? And funny enough, the same day or the day after I got my pregnancy test that said I'm pregnant with Franny, then I got my acceptance letter to PSU. So I waddled my way into that classroom in September. We just moved to Portland. I was heavily pregnant with my daughter. I had her during winter break and then just took her back to class with me.
Goodness. Yeah. Nothing like doing everything all at one time. Yeah. Well, I thought you were a painter.
Yes. So and an art therapist. And I am. And I have I had a painting show that just closed at Powell's. That's the visual component to this book. So I never stopped painting or taking photographs. So the painting has continued. And I did paint throughout writing and editing the book. And then that culminated in a full painting show of 16 paintings that were all featured at Powell's after the book came out.
See, I didn't even realize that you were doing the writing. I thought of you as a painter. So when this all happened and you've been gone for several years, I was like, what? Where did this come from? Now I'm understanding. And all of it's come together. So now let's back up even further.
Sure.
Tell us a little of your story,
yeah,
which created this the book, basically, the story in the book.
Yeah. Mother Winter came out of my experience emigrating from the Soviet Union, right as the Soviet Union was collapsing at the very tail end of 1989, right before the fall of the Berlin Wall. It took us a while, about a year, to actually be vetted and go through the immigration process as refugees. And the Soviet Union at the time was actually trying to live out its, you know, post-Stalin years and have a better, more kind of democratic socialist life. And it was really in my opinion, the strange, tyrannical Republican government of America that shamed Gorbachev into going south. And so the country broke up. You know, now we have like a totalitarian government there that I'm sure American interventionism has a lot to do with. And so when we got here, everybody kept asking me, well, where's your mother?
Well, I was going to ask you, how old were you?
I was 11 when we left and 12 when we arrived.
Okay.
About.
And the we was?
And the we was me and my young father, who my mother had, they both had me around 20 years old. And so he was just a young man in his very early 30s. Mm-hmm. And I was so traumatized and so so used to not having a mother. My mother was an alcoholic, which was shameful, but very prevalent in Russia at the time. But for a woman, it was like such a sin that they just would erase a woman who wasn't palatable. And so the story was, you know, just hush it away, pretend that this is not happening, and not really treat it as a disease. So by the time we got here, I got used to pretending that I don't even have a mother. And so right away, my dad, you know, just stuck me in the Hebrew Academy. He was like, religion will take care of her.
And where were you living?
We arrived in Philadelphia at first and then moved to New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the book kind of came out of that experience.
And did religion take care of you, Sophie?
Religion takes care of no one. You know, religion is spiritual freedom that is an accompaniment to, you know, values and community and basic needs and a mother.
Oops. There you go. So did your mother ever come to this?
So I have not heard from or of my mother since the day we left the Soviet Union. So 1989 was the last I've ever seen of my mother. And so the book also talks about my coming to terms with that and realizing that I have to try to look for her or find out more about her. And I go back and I try to look for her and I just kind of find like a racist, anti-Semitic, creepy, scary Russia and realize I'm Soviet, I'm not Russian, and Russia does not want me and I don't want it. And I could not for the life of me figure out a way to find this missing person out there.
Wow. Any other relatives? here in this country or there?
We have tons of relatives all over from my father's side. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody, there's like a mass exodus. A lot of people live in Tel Aviv. Like a lot of people moved to Germany. There's still some relatives back in Russia, but very few. My dad is actually from Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. He's an Azerbaijani Jew. Azeri. Yeah, it's a sect of Jews called Gorsky Yevrei. They're called like the mythical mountain Jews of the Caucasus Mountains. Mm-hmm. And very small. They're not Bukharian. They're not Sephardic. They're their own sect. So there's also a lot of prejudice against people from the Caucasus region there as well. Hugely so.
I'm just thinking all of these DNA testing that people do, I understand that when there's a very small population, it's almost impossible to link into it because they don't have enough people to make it. So when I hear you speaking and I'm thinking, oh boy, you're probably a perfect example of,
I don't know, but my mother's side, I don't know what the DNA could have, I've done a DNA test. I didn't know that I could link into too much. I mean, I've done kind of everything one can do with the information that I have about her. I was the fourth of all these only girls. On my matrilineal side, you know, my mom was an only child, so there's nobody in that right. vein. My grandma was an only child wow. and survivor of the Leningrad blockade and of World War II, but barely. And then her mother, my great-granny, Nadezhda, was also an only child girl.
How did you find out all of this information since you were 11 when you came?
I knew it. I think that if I told something to my son today, like all the history that I'm telling him now, mm-hmm. if I disappeared from his life tomorrow, I think when he was 40 years old, he would retain that information.
Yeah.
So this is all the information that I have because my father doesn't give me any.
Yeah. He's living his own life.
He's living his own life. Yeah. Yeah.
When you came, how much English did you speak?
Not very much. Like, breakfast is at 3:30, you know, like I learned, you know, in like the English way, not really right. the American. And then I would watch The Bionic Woman and Married with Children and The A-Team and really learned English that way. You know, I'm hugely American. I say in the book, I love America. It's broken like me.
Well, and you have no trace of an accent. Do you speak any Azari or Russian or any other language?
I speak fluent Russian. I can read the prayer books. Like I know my prayer Hebrew. I'm not like right. a conversational. I know the tiniest bit of Yiddish. I know the tiniest bit of Farsi mm-hmm. and a tiny bit of Ukrainian because that's what my stepmom speaks. But no, I being an American was like my job as a teenager. I was like, I'm not going to get these girls to, you know, be mean to me anymore. And plus I played the violin, so I would just could mimic by ear what was happening. My girlfriends that came over at the same time still have their accents, but I was determined to fit in.
You did very well. Thank do you still play violin?
I absolutely do not. I broke that violin over the back of a chair and gave it up the minute I could. I was a very intense, antagonistic child when it came to playing music.
I see. Ivy is sitting here with a big grin on her face.
But she's a musician, and I think is. You have to get over some kind of a hump and want it and then be competent. I felt no competence. None would whatsoever, and so it didn't work for me. There was no positive regard there.
Right, right. Well, it sounds as though you've got enough means of expression with the writing and the art. It keeps you busy.
It sure does. And so now
what's with the art therapy as well?
Well, you know, I have a master's degree in creative arts therapy. That's
before.
Yeah. I went to the SVA and got that and did my 1,000 hours and got licensed. I have the whole alphabet soup.
High achieving immigrant.
Yeah. Right. And I still didn't do good enough for my dad. Like I'm Jewish and I'm not a doctor or a lawyer. And I didn't marry a doctor or a lawyer. Like for shame. So, I mean, my dad at our wedding, Mike and I got married, got up there, the toast he made to everybody's disdain was, you know, I've lived in America for 10 years, for 15 years now. Look at me. I'm an oral surgeon. He's like, you were born here. I give you 10 years to make a man of yourself. Mike is a carpenter and he does fine enough. But it was just really, he thought he was being kind. But so that's in our family, everybody's high achieving and critical.
Right. Sounds familiar.
Well, yeah, you know, but you know, the burden then of being artistic and silly and strange and irreverent and then being like, what do I do?
Wonderful. Why are you here this weekend?
Exactly. Now? This is a huge homecoming. I love the coast. You know, I'm sad we don't live here anymore. And at the same time, I'm glad I have more culture and more accessibility and diversity for my children.
Of course, the culture has grown by incredibly.
Yes.
These days, as a matter of fact, I'll just hold up this piece of paper. This is just this weekend.
No, I believe it. The people here are so motivated to bring in the arts, like for sure. And it's not like we were necessarily even lacking when I lived here, but it was more sleepy and decidedly white. So I wanted to expose my children to a little bit more of what I grew up with, I guess. And so we now live an urban life in Northwest Portland. But I am having a homecoming and. So not just to promote Mother Winter, but because I really wanted to be a part of this art scene here on the coast. And so me and Lainey Zumas, who wrote, do you know her?
Yeah, she's a dear friend.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Love it.
She's a really good friend of mine as well. And she was also my professor at PSU and my thesis advisor.
She's here this weekend?
We are here together doing the festival together, getting lit at the beach. I guess they didn't promote us being here well enough if nobody knows that me and Lainey are together.
No, not exactly.
She's across the river.
I know she's from
Townsend. The way.
It's a joke.
Oh, that's right. You don't Port even Angeles, live across the river.
She's in Port Angeles. Yeah.
What would she know?
Up the peninsula and the mountains.
We're going to get to you in a minute. So you and Lainey Zumas.
So 2:30, we have a panel tomorrow. And with Megan Labrizi, she's a very powerful queer woman writer, reviewer, editor for the Kirkus Reviews.
Oh, wow.
So she's going to be in conversation with us. She's going to do a thoughtful discussion with us about feminism, sense of place, and the body. Both Lainey and I have huge sections of our book that take place on the Oregon coast. Lainey's book takes place in the central Oregon coast of a dystopian reality of lack of access to abortion and IVF and women's bodies being censored. And my book describes my time, you know, kind of living here and becoming a mother here on the Oregon coast as well. So we thought, why not? We'll splice those two things together and talk feminism and sense of place together.
Wonderful. Awesome. So what's happening is that for those of you who are not familiar with Get Lit at the Beach, it's a fabulous festival. It begins, as I mentioned, it's put on by the Tolovana Arts Colony. Starts at 5 o'clock this evening. Now, I have to tell you that the dinner is sold out. It does sell out because it's such a wonderful, this 8th annual. However, this evening, there is a piece, a nice big chunk that is open to the public and is free. And that's at 6:30 at the Cannon Beach Library. Professor Peter Lindsay will be there. And then you can head on over to the Wine Shack for another author who has written a book about wine. He will be giving a talk. And that's all free. And then on Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Coaster Theater in Cannon Beach, there's an author's panel. Are you involved in that? Or is it just, I don't know if all the authors or what?
The Sunday thing, I think all the authors are going to be present for the Sunday thing. Yeah,
That's quite something. Now, during the day tomorrow, which you missed out on this year, but listen up because next year you can catch it. That's what Sophie was talking about, along with
Lainey Zumas and Megan Labrizi of Kirkus Reviews. Yeah,
and many others
will be there.
And a whole bunch of incredible authors. And you can read about this, the Tolovana Arts Colony, Get Lit at the Beach, and check it out for next time, if not. Maybe you know somebody who's going.
Maybe you could scalp a ticket.
There you go.
To hear us talk about red clocks and Mother Winter. I mean, maybe I could get you in. I don't know. The 100th call or call Carol.
Yeah, right. Good luck. But it's well worth finding out about and taking in. Now, as far as Sophie's book goes, and Lonnie's too, I'm sure, where can people get Mother Winter?
So the best thing to do is to support your local bookshop. Order it from your local bookshop. Go tell your local bookshop about it. Here at Cannon Beach Books and Jupiter's
and Lucy's books
and Astoria and
Godfather's books.
Hopefully, in Seaside, all over
books,
the place.
Yeah.
Beach books. But I know that the event is going to be sponsored by Cannon Beach Books and Jupiter's books,
great.
And they will have books for sale. We're going to have a signing,
yes.
And I'm also going to be stopping by Cannon Beach Bookstore to. to sign some stock and just to talk to people. It's so the Cannon Beach bookstore that's downtown Cannon Beach, they mated their staff pick. So I'm going to go and hug Maureen and talk to her. And wonderful. If anybody wants a signed book, I'll happily be there. But please,
when is that?
I'm going to be stepping by there on Sunday, after the event wraps up, because if people didn't have access, I want to make sure there's equity and everybody. I'm happy to answer questions. I'm happy to sign your book. I want to meet you, hug you, talk to you about socialism, feminism, writing, memoirs, whatever you
equity.
Want.
Equity. I'm thinking, there she is.
Yeah, I'm right Soviet, there. Right? Socialists. Soviets unite. So I will be at the Cannon Beach bookstore to say thank you to Maureen for everything, because for sure, books kept me alive when I lived here at the coast and the community.
And Terry Brooks are the people who established the Get Lit at the Beach. Unfortunately,
not the Beach, the Beach.
Did I say
Get
that?
Get Lit at the Beach.
No, that's wonderful. No, but thank you to them
next
so
year.
Much.
There are three of us in there having too much fun is the problem. But and Val left us, but she sure left
a
legacy.
I miss her.
That was her shop. And then Terry Brooks is going to be here this year. For Get Lit at the Beach. So
yes.
You can beach. And
beach.
you can check it out Sunday at 10. Come on over to the Coaster Theater in Cannon Beach. Meet everybody. And are you on do you have your own website so people can
see? I do. So the two last plugs I'll say are, you can also order the book through my website. It's just sophiashalmiev.com. But I also have an audiobook that I recorded myself with my own post-Soviet voice in an audiobook. Yeah, Simon & Schuster actually allowed me to do that.
Wow.
Which, kudos to them. I'm a little bit, raw and ragged for them. Unusual, I would say. She's an unusual girl. So they let me do that. And so if anybody is sort of like a books on tape person, or wants to drive and listen, that's really perfect. Please do that. So Audible, iTunes, whatever your deal is, but IndieBound, your local
bookshop.
So your
website again?
It's sophiashalmiev.com.
Why don't you spell that?
Okay. SophiaShalmiev.com.
There you go.
Thank you
Carol. So much.
Oh my
and
God,
congratulations to you on the new book. It is gorgeous too, folks. That's why I wanted you to be able to see, even if you can't get to the store right away.
Oh, yes,
you will
my mother
be inspired.
On the cover, yes.
There you go. Okay.
Hi,
I'm getting a hug. Whoa, right on the air.
Love you. Love you. Okay. Love
thanks
you.
So much.
I'll see you later.
So
we have so much to talk about.
I'm going to put Ivy's music back on,
author.
And we'll get a chance to talk to Ivy about her book and brand new book that's happening. Stay tuned, KMUNS Story of KTCB Tillamook.
Myself inside your eyes. We'll laugh, we'll cry, we'll dance a jig. We'll trip over a strangler fig. It's hard to know. It's hard. It's hard to know.
Oh, Yeah. That was Ivy Ross Ritchie, and she is still sitting right here, only in a different spot.
I switched chairs.
You did. Wonderful. Well, I'm just blown away that I have three authors on this show this week, which is very unusual.
Yes.
And it's very exciting because Ivy has a brand new book out also, The Force of Gravity, and perfect timing because this is April, as everybody knows, of course, is National Poetry Month, and your book is poetry.
It is. Right? It's a book of poetry. Yes.
Tell us about it. Where did this come from? Because, again, just as I said, I knew Sophia as an artist, a painter. I knew Ivy as a singer, as you just heard. I've got three albums of hers. And here she is with a book of poetry.
Yes.
And a few other tricks up your sleeve,
just
too.
One or two.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
So where did this come from?
This one, like the title, it really, it came to me with The Force of Gravity. It was born from a need to process the loss of a dear friend. Mm. Who was also a musician, and last year he took his own life. And yeah. He was a writer and an ally in that way, just one of my dearest friends from growing up. And we used to make so much trouble and have so much fun, and one of the things we shared in common was our love of the written word. And so when he passed away, when he died, I was at a natural transition point in my life where I was at a crossroads, and I decided to take that next season, which just ended, so basically last winter, to devote myself to writing as a way of knowing, as Natalie Goldberg would say. It really happened that when I was asked to speak at his memorial service, I started going through and looking for some of his writing, and through all of my journals and through just sifting through my own writing, I found dozens and, in the end, hundreds of poems of my own.
Whoa.
Because my degree is actually in creative writing.
I did not know that.
But that all funneled into songwriting eventually.
I see.
So what naturally evolved, with zero ambition, 100% desire to sit still and be with my grief and also be with the creative process, this anthology of selected poems of mine from 1994, when I was doing my creative writing degree in New York, to 2018 came to be. And it was really quite astonishing. Throughout the process, I would find little typewritten notes from Stuart in my journals that would talk about the importance of writing and beautifully written, and specifically urging me to go on. And this, I'd find at moments I was about to give up.
Yeah.
And so really this book I intended as a process for myself and for my heart and maybe for friends and family that might get a kick out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of turned into a thing.
A beautiful book.
Yeah.
Even the cover is beautiful.
Yeah. The Teresa Gray, a dear friend in Taos, New Mexico, offered this work of art for the cover.
Yeah. Because you make art as well.
A little bit.
A little bit. Can you read us something?
I would love to.
Poem?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and I'll read you the title track.
Mm-hmm.
This poem is called The Force of Gravity. Forceless force. What if we had to believe in gravity for it to work? If we had to go to church and tithe for gravity to hold us to the earth? Before these words appeared on this sheet of paper, there was just space, one blank slate with a four-way fold through the middle, sitting there silently, held to a desk, held down to the floor, connected to a foundation fastened to the earth by gravity. This poem was made possible by gravity.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So was that written? When was that written?
That one was written, and this is all organized by year, so I can flip to the page. That was written in 2018. Hey, just last year.
Okay.
Let me read you just one really, really quick one. This one will just take two breaths. This one is called A Far Deeper Hunger.
there is a far deeper hunger than the one I feel at mealtime. That is the one I must learn to nourish.
Mm, beautiful. Yeah. Talk about pith.
Pith.
And that's just right there. Yeah. Beautiful.
So some of the poems are more geared towards storytelling, more narrative, and others are just straight to essence. A lot of imagery and just...
Did you find that when you were putting the book together, you were doing less music? Since the poems have gone into your songs, now that you put the poems in a book.
Yes. Yeah, I did. That's a good question. I did find I was doing less music, and I found where there were large gaps in the writing. Like 2007, I couldn't find any poems while I put out an album that year. Uh-huh. So it kind of goes both ways.
Right. Right. Nice. And I've also heard you play, well, we should also say one of another part, big part of Ivy's life, why her name comes into my emails often, is that she books the music over at the Sou'wester.
Yes, it is one of my greatest delights.
Washington, and does a fabulous job. But as you heard her slip in earlier, where do you live?
I live in Port Angeles, Washington.
With your husband.
Yes, with
who's
Joel.
Also a musician.
Yes.
And I've played your music on my folk show as well, and you can hear his horn accompanying you, which is beautiful. So how do you do that from Port to Port?
Port to Port? Well, there's this really cool modern invention that some of us pay a little bit of time and attention to, the internet.
Yes.
And so this allows me, well, that in addition to having traveled and toured mm-hmm. musically for so many years myself, I'm able to connect with musicians from all over the country and bring them here to the Sou'wester. And basically I set up the shows and then the awesome staff over there takes care of the musicians.
Beautiful.
So tomorrow we have Sunny and the Sunsets coming up from Oakland, and Kelly Stoltz, who's also in the band, is going to be opening for him. And it's going to be from 8 to 10 in the Pavilion. It's a benefit show for the Sou'wester Arts mm-hmm. and nonprofit.
And you have music all the time.
Yes. Every single weekend
yeah.
there is, well, unless there's a full book out. So sometimes people do book the property, mm-hmm. which is also
right.
something people can do.
Right.
But otherwise, on Saturdays from 8 to 10 p.m., either in the lodge or in the Pavilion.
It's a delightful experience to just drop in. And the place is often packed. You can't find a place to park your car. But some of those people are roaming around the property or hanging out in the trailers or whatever. What's the email address over there?
Sou'westerlodgemusic@gmail.com to contact me.
Okay.
And then, Sou'westerlodge@gmail.com. Now, for just information in general, including how to get tickets for the show tomorrow, mm-hmm. It's sou'westerlodge.com. Just go to the website. Everything you need
Everything
to know
is there.
There.
You just need to push a lot of buttons. Do you have your own website for your book and
I
your music?
I do.
And
you know, because I had zero ambition with this particular project, this mm-hmm. book, it's not accessible through my website yet. But I have a website that talks more about my work with gender justice,
mm-hmm.
and it's ivyarts.org.
Gender justice, we didn't even mention that. Can you give that to us in a... quickie?
Yes. So I'm about to go on tour screening the music video that I made last year. And basically this, it speaks to the power of a conversation. I go into schools and essentially talk to young people and to their educator, you know, to the staff and educators, teachers at the school and students about how we can work together to create a culture and a society that moves beyond limiting constructs of gender so that we can all be creative and this world can benefit from the unique talents of each individual.
Did you study something that points you in that direction?
I would say just my experience mm-hmm. as a girl becoming a woman in this culture has made me really passionate about that. And then the field of education. So my degree is in creative writing with a minor in education. So turning back around and looking at what our education system might need in order to be a safe place for everyone is where I get this particular spark and fire.
Have you presented this material at the Sou'wester?
I have. I actually just hosted a workshop for the Girls Sit Screaming music video for Hilltop, the Owako Middle School.
Oh, wow.
And the girls just were awesome.
Well, that is an awesome song. I have played that 4 times at least.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, Carol.
And so you are bookable at school? I mean, your schedule is so crazy, but people should get in touch with you.
Absolutely, yeah. ivyarts.org is the way to get me on your calendar.
Great. Ivy Ross Ritchie, brand new book, The Force of Gravity. How do people get your book?
That one is searchable. If you look up The Force of Gravity and then my pen name, we didn't mention this, but I'm going by my maiden name for my pen name, which is E. Ross.
E. Ross.
Yes.
Okay. Not E. I. Ross. Just E.
Just
Ross.
Just E. Ross.
You got too many names.
Well,
for
I
me.
Wanted to have it allude to Eros.
Ah, of course. How silly of me. there it is. Write it down and you'll see it. It's right in front of me. Ivy, thank you so much for coming in. We will see you again.
Thank you, Carol.
And good luck on this tour.
Thank you
good
so
luck
much.
With the book.
Thank
okay.
you.
Ivy Ross Ritchie. And right now, I've got some music for you from the North Coast Symphonic Band, and they're coming up next. They are my non-writers, but it's music. Hey, there's writing in music. Coast Community Radio, KMUNS, Storia, KTCB, Tillamook. Is the North Coast Symphonic Band. And my guests are, well, you guessed it, of course, Dave Becker, the conductor and director of the band. And hi, Dave.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Oh, you're wearing your Oregon, but it's white and green. I don't know. I've been trying to figure out what these colors are. Oh, there's yellow on it.
It's
okay,
yellow.
I got it. And then also Bob Latore is here. And he is the fabulous horn player. We were just talking about Ivy's husband, who's a horn player, too.
Oh, nice.
So they are here because the concert on Sunday is called In the Spotlight. It's at 2 p.m. It's a free concert, thanks to the community, thanks to them. And it will start, however, at 1:30 with the Northern Lights Flute Ensemble. And then... okay, this is the 7th of April, this Sunday. I'm going to let them tell you, because this is, I think this is a great idea. You've got
well,
so
you.
Many talented people. You're featuring them.
Well,
so.
That's the idea. And
yeah.
I don't know, it just sort of came to me. And I was trying to think about, well, which soloist should we use and what should we do? And I thought, well, we've got all these people. And so why not put you know, feature as many as I can.
Yeah.
And so that's why Bob's here. Bob's our principal trumpet player in the band,
and he's
done
fabulous.
A great job for almost as long as I've been conducting it. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be performing a solo that he composed.
Oh,
you
wow.
want to tell him about
it? Tell us. Your...
Well, sure, yeah. Let's see. I've always been interested in the grand tradition of cornet solos from the 19th century. That was it was a really big deal. Herbert Clark was the main soloist with the John Philip Sousa band, and he kind of was the leader of the tradition of the cornet soloist out front, doing fancy things and exploring new ways, new sound effects you can make on the horn, triple mm-hmm. tonguing and glisses and the whole thing. And it became a big feature and a big deal of just kind of the music scene of the time. And so I've studied Herbert Clark, sometime in college, I bought a book of cornet etudes written in 1914. It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff that you never hear otherwise. You just have to buy the book and play it. There's no record of it, right?
How many cornet players do you have in the North Coast Symphonic Band?
There's usually five. It runs from four to six.
Wow.
Yeah. And
okay.
cornet and trumpet are essentially the same instrument. They're slightly different, but...
So people can go back and forth?
Yeah.
So most
of them in the band play trumpet on the band pieces, but occasionally if they have cornets, we use cornets on certain kinds of pieces.
That's what I was wondering. So, because I know you as a trumpet player, and now you're talking cornets, and now I get it.
Yeah,
okay.
Essentially the same instrument, slightly different sound. The cornet has a little bit mellower sound.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
More solo-like and not so blasty as a trumpet. So anyway, I for many years I played this book of etudes and I played them so much and loved them so much I started hearing background music in my mind and thinking I could write band parts for this. All I need is to write 28 other parts to accompany me, and because that's how big a band is. A lot of people don't realize a concert band has more separate parts than a full scale symphony orchestra. So, I mean, between 25 and 30 different parts. So that's a lot to be responsible for.
Yes.
But you just write it and make it work.
Wait, so you did that?
I did. Mm-hmm.
So you wrote parts for all... You know, I'm just remembering you did something outrageous for one of the plays at the NCRD. You took some music and you scored the whole thing or you wrote it, and I'm thinking, I thought you were a trumpet player, but you keep on surprising me. Not to mention the fact that he's also the trumpet player in the Sedona Fire Band, which
That's right.
was the last time we were talking about you. Uh-huh. So where does this name Gatti's Polonaise, what is that?
Well, it took me a while to figure out that the composer of the piece, of the original etude, was named Domenico Gatti, an Italian guy. And it's funny because in the original book that from 1914, he's not credited anywhere. But I found out through other means that he was the one who wrote it. So I just wanted to honor him.
Nice.
And the style of the piece is a Polonaise, which used to be a well-known style along with all the other styles of the band.
Is that something people dance to also, the Polonaise?
I guess so. I can't say I'm much of a dancer, so...
yes. I'm thinking that's how I know
European.
It. But so Dave, how
so
did,
this is one. He's one of our soloists. It's a great piece. It's very well done and very playable, and the parts are interesting for the band. So
get a good mark on that.
They're not just sitting counting rests all the time. But we've got some other soloists too.
Yeah.
So we've got Martin King on clarinet, and Martin is not a North Coast resident, but he is very active. Mm-hmm. Plays in lots of the groups here, comes over from the Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be doing the Carl Maria von Weber clarinet concertino or little concerto. That's one of the mainstays of clarinet repertoire. It's one of the most famous pieces for clarinet. So we'll accompany him with a band accompaniment on that. And then we've got another soloist that is really going to be a hit. I know all of them will be, but we've got Alan Pierce, who was the bass trombonist with the Oregon Symphony for decades, who's retired, lives in Reno, and we've been trying to get him up to solo with the band. And for some time, he played with them several years ago and was a huge, huge artistic success and a lot of fun. So anyway, and he just happened to be available for this one. So we thought, well, we'll put him in the spotlight too.
Beautiful.
And so we've got that. And then we have three of the members of the band are going to conduct. Because we've got a lot of conductors, and so I picked three. So, of course, John Hammond, who is kind of the assistant conductor, he almost always conducts one or two pieces on our concerts. So he's doing one, and that features Amanda McClure on piano, a beautiful piano part on the Seal Lullaby by Eric Whitaker. And then Amanda's husband, Michael McClure, who's the band director at Warrenton High School, who took over the program when John Hammond retired and has maintained the same high standards and success. So John's or Michael will be conducting a piece too
on the program. So I see here.
So he'll be. Yeah.
And there's also Brian Bergman.
And then I'm seeing Brian Bergman.
Oh, I'm sorry. And then Brian. Yeah,
I didn't
know
Brian was a conductor.
My thing gets stapled
together.
Yeah, Brian is teaching middle school band over in the Owako District at the Hilltop. Is that it? Hilltop School.
Yeah.
And fine musician. So he's doing a piece, too.
Boy,
and,
this is rich. This is rich. Good for you. I think this is terrific to bring forth locals as well as the visitors. Alan Pierce, I wasn't familiar with. Of course, Martin King has come numerous times.
Yep.
That's exciting. Yep. This is all happening this Sunday in the Spotlight at the Liberty Theater. That's 12th and Commercial. Now, when we say it's free, that means people don't need tickets at all.
No.
Just come to the door and come in. But do come early so you can get the seat you want and so you can enjoy the fabulous Northern Lights Flute Ensemble. And who is in that?
That is, those are all people from our flute section. And Janet Bowler is the kind of the leader of that group that was put together. And you put me on the spot here. Candace Chapman and Lauren Anderson and Erica Hyatt are playing in it. So it's a quartet.
Very nice.
So they've been rehearsing diligently. And I'm glad you mentioned that just to make it clear that this starts before 2 o'clock.
Absolutely.
That's kind of our tradition. We like to have a music for people to come early to, and they'll be playing on the stage. Not out in the lobby, they'll be on the stage and everything, and
it'll
be delightful.
It's terrific. So if you're there by 1 o'clock or 1:15?
Doors open at 1:15.
1:15, okay. And you can come in, get your favorite seat, and catch the beautiful flute music. Can't go wrong with flute music, in my humble opinion.
Well, and it's a nice contrast between, you know, what we're doing, just because of the textures are light, and you know, it's lots of transparency, and then we come out with our 45 members and play big things,
right? And of course, all four of the flutists join the band because they're all part of the band.
Right.
So, and you've got you managed to get a whole bunch. Is this your actual cover? You're going to have all these photos?
Yeah. So
terrific.
That's Brian and John Hammond and Michael. And then Amanda, who's shown here with a euphonium, but she'll be playing piano on that.
Yeah.
And then the whole band, Alan Pierce, Martin King, and the four flutes, and your
and
other guest
with,
here, Bob.
With this thing in his mouth, so you can...
I spend most of my time with that thing in my mouth.
Wonderful. North Coast Symphonic Band. Do you have as many musicians as you want these days?
Yeah, it varies depending on, mostly I think on who might be, we've got a lot of retired people and who might be taking a trip and things. But I think we're a little smaller than we were in the last concert, but it varies. It's usually about this size.
Yeah.
And actually smaller is on this concert, smaller is good. Because we're going to use the 9-foot grand on piano. Amanda's piece. And normally we don't have room for that and have to use an electric piano on
much
stage.
Better.
But so there's room for the piano. So it all works out.
Nice. Well, you're big enough, that's for sure. Yeah. And they're expanding the stage at the Liberties, so you'll have lots more room.
Oh, that's nice.
So you can use the piano all the time. This Sunday, and is there a website for North Coast Symphonic Band?
Yeah, there's a North Coast Symphonic Band website. We're doing some other pieces besides solo works, too. We're doing things the entire group's playing on. We're doing a Rossini overture called La Cenerentola, which is Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a piece called Them Basses to feature the basses. They're in the spotlight, too,
nice.
The tubas and low brass. It's a piece that it's a march that the tubas have the melody for the entire march.
Oh, my Lord.
They never have to play the oompa parts that they're usually stuck with. We're doing a Cole Porter medley that's very well
written.
That's
going to be fun.
A beautiful, quiet piece by Edward Elgar that's been transcribed for band.
That's not Pomp and Circumstance for a change. That'll be nice.
Chanson de Martin.
And a piece by James Barnes that's similar to the one that you had playing before we started our portion of the show.
Wonderful, wonderful. Always a good time. And it does get to be a full house, so be sure to be there early this Sunday. 2 p.m., no, 1:30 p.m., get there 1:15, get yourself in there and enjoy the concert. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you so much for making music all the time happening.
Mm-hmm. Thank
Wonderful.
You. Thank
Conductor you. Dave Becker and trumpet and cornetist Bob Latore. Okay.
Thanks very much.
And I've got some music for you from Terry Robb. He's going to be at the NCRD in Halem tomorrow night. And I lined up Still on 101. Seemed like an appropriate piece. Thanks for being here, folks. Stay tuned. Got a very exciting Icelander. Yeah. How many Icelanders are there around here? Not too many. Yeah, Still on 101, and he will be on 101 in Nehalem. That's 9th Street, NCRD, North County Recreation District, tomorrow evening. And it's a double. You get two for the price of one, actually. It's Terry Robb and Ty Curtis. It's a blues night. Oh, my God, there's so much going on here, folks. It's a little crazy. Something else going on tomorrow night, which is very exciting because, as I just mentioned, how many... Now, do you say Icelander in English?
Yeah, that's what we say,
okay. They're very rare, and I've got two of them here. And it was kind of funny because I mentioned you, and someone said, oh, there was a couple from Iceland at the Shelburne last night, or someplace last night. And I said, that would be, yes, that would be.
Yeah,
there's, you know, Runar and Gudrun are the only Icelanders. Now, there may be others around, but they don't make themselves known. They're here because of, well, several things. They're here in our area. They do live in Iceland. They're not from there only. They live there, but they're here. And we have a fabulous evening coming up tomorrow night. That is Saturday the 6th, and it is Icelandic Connections. It's at the Astoria Visual Arts Gallery, which is 1010 Duane, right on the corner. Beautiful, window-full gallery, and it's from 6 to 8 p.m., and it is not a huge venue. So I recommend getting there early so you can be sure to get in. My guest is author Runar Helgi Vignisson.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Is that
perfect.
Really yeah, the way you say
yeah,
it? Okay.
Very well done.
That's because I wrote it in my alphabet instead of yours.
Oh, I see.
I couldn't do that. I do want to mention that Anne Greenwood Riosecco is going to be there also. She has a show up. It went up for the whole month, and it's called Icelandic Threads. So this is all happening at the AVA. So welcome to you both. I know Runar is going to be the one speaking, although she's staying away from the mic. Okay. Congratulations. Yeah. We're so happy to have you here. Now, you did sort of come for the Portland thing.
Yeah,
that,
the Portland
the
thing, you know, that small Portland thing with like 15,000 people at the conference, AWP conference. I come once in a while for the AWP conference because I run the creative writing program at the University of Iceland. And since we're stuck there in the middle of the Atlantic, it's good for us to get away and see others and hear what people are thinking in other countries.
So do you teach your program in Icelandic?
Yes, we teach in Icelandic. It's the only program in the whole world that teaches in Icelandic. And not too many people speak Icelandic worldwide. There's around 350,000 people in the whole world that speak Icelandic, so it's a bit like writing and speaking in a secret code.
Which is terrific, actually. I like that. But do most of those people still live in Iceland, or are there folks who have left the country?
Well, Icelanders have a tendency to travel a lot. We are the descendants of the Vikings, supposedly. So, you know, I think it's in our blood. So you can find Icelanders almost everywhere. 50,000 Icelanders live abroad.
Okay. Now, what you're going to be doing, why don't you tell us what you're going to be doing tomorrow evening?
I'll talk a little bit about my work. I'm the author of eight books of fiction. I'm also a translator, and I've translated a lot of American authors. So I think I'm going to read from a short story that I wrote a few years ago, and it's been translated into English. And it's partly based on a real, you know, event.
Can you tell us a little bit?
Well, it's partly based on the last days of my father-in-law, you know, when we went out for an excursion. He had all kinds of trouble in his last days. One of his toes had to be amputated, so he needed new sandals. And this story is about going out and getting new sandals for my father-in-law. Yeah.
Wow.
So it takes an unexpected turn, this excursion of ours. So, yeah, I'm going to read that. It's a rather short piece, so I can read the whole piece tomorrow.
Nice. Yeah. And that's part of another one of your books?
Yeah, it's part of an award-winning collection of short stories. So that came out a few years ago. So
okay, and you're a translator from English into Icelandic.
That's right.
Do you do it the other way as well?
I try not to. I think it's always best that a translator translates into his mother tongue.
Huh.
So that's the best way, you know. Once in a while, I try to do it the other way. So But I get somebody else to translate my own writings into English and other languages, you know. I could possibly do it, but, you know, I'm a very busy man and I can't do everything.
So, exactly. I'm thinking you're a writer, a very much published writer, mm-hmm. a very much published translator, and a professor as well.
Right.
So you, and a traveler. And so you mm-hmm. have a very full life. Can you talk to us a little bit, tell us about your book a little bit in Icelandic so people can hear what the language sounds like, because the written language is practically impossible to read. It, mm-hmm. it looks like nothing I've ever seen.
Já, þessi bók er samskipti kynjana, þetta er sagnasvegur samskipti kynjana og þau gerast öll eftir að fólki gengur í hjónaband. So that's a little sample for you. It's Icelandic is related to the other Scandinavian languages. It's the original language of the Vikings, the Old Norse that the Vikings spoke. But since we've been stuck there in the middle of the Atlantic, isolated, ours didn't change as much as the other Scandinavian languages that borrowed a lot from, you know, the neighboring languages. Yeah.
And Iceland is considered one of the Nordic countries.
Yes.
But as is Finland, but neither of them are actually part of Scandinavia.
No, that's correct. Yeah. Scandinavia is
of course
Norway
here,
and Sweden and maybe Denmark.
Right.
You know, but
here we kind of put all of you together, but we never get Icelanders. So we're delighted to have you here.
Folks, well, thanks for having us.
This is, we don't have time to go into anything more because we're up, but I urge you to catch Runar at the Astoria Visual Arts Gallery tomorrow evening, 1010 Duane, from 6 to 8. Come early. And you can also meet Gudrun while you're there, the silent partner who has got her own life. And why don't you say your full name for us?
Runar Helgi Vignesson.
Yeah, it's a little bit different from the way I said it. I like yours better.
Almost the same.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for coming to Astoria. Looking forward to hearing lots more from you.
Thank you.
Having you come back sometime too with
sure
more
will.
Time.
Thank
okay.
you.
Folks, it is time to move on. I just want to let you know that tonight is the last night for the Reader's Theater Antigone at the Liberty Theater. I saw it last night.